You got an applause break.
Excellent.
That's a lot of pressure. Let's start down at the end. Let's hear from you on what specifically you do. Brad, go ahead and talk to the folks about specifically what you do.
Well, I run the global infrastructure, which includes all the networking functions, the cloud functions, the service desk, and I also work with the venture team on bringing new venture purchases into the company as well.
If that stuff is relevant to what you're doing, make sure you jot down any questions you have. Again, if you just come back in, we're going to turn this over to you guys for a Q&A in a couple of minutes, so be ready for those. BJ?
So I own all the commerce systems for the company. Probably the easiest way to describe it is any software, online services that your companies buy is through my systems and infrastructure. And then any PCs you buy, the Windows being installed on those PCs also go through my infrastructure.
Great. And Jackie, without further ado?
Yeah. I run all of the enterprise services. So everything from SAP, the engine that runs some of BJ's commerce stuff, to social and collaboration, our BI platforms, our integration services, et cetera.
Great. Well, since we just ended on Jackie, let's start with you with the first question. We'll sort of prime the pump before we turn things over to you, the audience, for your questions. So Jackie, yeah, you manage a shared services team, helps our global workforce discover information, collaborate, while managing enterprise-wide processes and systems. So talk to us about the challenges, the opportunities your team is working on to transform the company.
Yeah, it's been interesting and exciting. So despite having to test and work with the product teams on the new releases, the actual running of the enterprise services, we've had to pivot to a services mentality. So think about providing services such as I described, integration services, collaboration services, analytical services. So these types of services and making sure that we're focused on experiences. Mm-hmm. How do you deliver a service with the experience in mind? Mm-hmm. It requires all the IT organization to think differently about how we deliver. Also, capabilities in terms of those services, and as well as, you know, working more closely with the teams because those end-to-end experiences integrate across.
Mm-hmm. Brad, let's go to you. Your team manages our global infrastructure services, spans networks and data center capacity to venture integration, incident management. So talk us about the strategy you have in place to modernize the infrastructure and perhaps the anticipated business outcomes.
Great, thank you. First off, I think of infrastructure as a transparent partner in the end user experience. And so that brings me to the notion of driving it like a utility function, always on. So to the extent we can actually build and manage our infrastructure in a way that provides that transparency, for me, it allows the end user to be completely productive and not have the infrastructure get in the way of ourselves. With that, I think there's a confluence of things going on in the industry that's important to note and manage to. And I'm sure you're all very familiar with IoT, bring your own devices, the cloud hockey stick that's happening, the security parameters around that. So these lead me to think about how I architect standards into my environment, how I look at platform as a capability to manage proactively as opposed to reactively the things that come up on the help desk and services worldwide. And that really takes a automation focus into the infrastructure so that we can outtask, if we need to, labor pools around managing those services 7x24. So it's really about standardizing and automating as much as possible to actually get to that end user goal of a utility-oriented service.
Mm-hmm. Now, BJ, when you've been on the stage in the past, you spoke about the work your team is doing on the company's core commerce systems. And that has included moving applications to the cloud, but also involves making customer experiences more personal. Talk about the IT's role in business owners using the projects as an example, and perhaps how that's changed over the past few years even.
Sure, I think just like in the industry here at Microsoft a couple years ago, IT was really seen as a cost center. It was really a back office function. How do we squeeze the costs out of it? And so frankly, we would work with internal constituents in defining how the user experience would be for your companies. And what we've seen is we've become more of a strategic asset for the company. You know, IT's in this unique position where we span the entire company. We work with the product teams, we work with the internal sales and marketing teams, but more importantly, we work with our partners and customers like yourselves. So our role has transitioned from being really internally focused to now my team is actually working with customers and partners to define those experiences. Mm-hmm. And instead of being internally focused, we're now able to focus on solutions that are built for these people in this room.
Great. Well, we are going to turn things over to you guys in the audience. If you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand, and we can send a mic runner over to you while you do that. So raise your hand if you have a question, something that's relevant to you guys. They are at your disposal. We have plenty of time. No rush, no urgency. Go ahead and raise your hand. The mic runners will come over to you. In the meantime, while you're thinking of those questions, and go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get the mic over to you while you're waiting. In the meantime, let me ask you about the change in the management at scale. You provide IT services to what, more than 200,000 users across 80 plus sites around the world. So specifically, I know for Brad and Jackie, talk about the change management best practices, key learnings in terms of networks, infrastructure, collaboration, productivity tools with the end users.
Go ahead, use it.
This is a great question because I think we're all challenged with the confluence of first and third party out there. Yeah. And then how do you operate on an onshore-offshore model, which is why that platform component is so important. And how do you manage change from those third parties inbound into your ecosystem so that you can provide that business continuity that we've always tried to achieve as a single source provider within normal IT organizations? Those are changing now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very, very important to focus in on that service automation, that platform work, and manage change between the third parties through that platform so you get a consistent end user experience. I think the part where we need to do some growth on is around how we tie infrastructure to the applications, because, and Jackie can talk more about this, we've got this DevOps model and we're constantly doing releases, and so how do we ensure the connection between change in the infrastructure and change in the application, again, to ensure that end user capability is kept at its optimal level.
Mm-hmm. And the difference around operating at scale, it's not about putting a program into the enterprise, right? It's about putting a service out. So when you think about that service, what's involved in deploying that service at scale? So everything from how do you train, how do you measure the adoption, how do you provide that end-to-end online real-time support and care of that service end-to-end? And for us, you know, partnering with our service, our solution integrators, you know, our TCS, Accenture, all of those, to help us scale in all of those areas is also part of how we have to do it.
Great. All right, looks like we have some questions. And again, if you want to ask something, raise your hand. We'll send a microphone over to you. We got one right down front here.
Hi, thank you for coming out today. Question on this thread of kind of being a cost center and moving kind of IT as a business, and driving a service culture mentality. If you could spend each of you maybe just 30 seconds on kind of, this isn't more of an organizational design question, right? Do you have the concept of like solution leads or business relationship managers, which, you know, within your respective tower or organizations are facing off against, you know, legal, finance, all the different functional disciplines, sales, marketing, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely we do. We call them business process managers, and it's a single person that'll be an owner for a process for the company, and then we'll partner with the various business leaders in the company to really understand what the company needs are, and then that business process manager really, you know, mediates all the inputs, because you can imagine, you know, departments in a company this large don't agree. And so not only is that an influence role in partnering with the business, but it's also a mediation role to say, okay, here are all the inputs, and based on this input, this is the solution we're going to deliver. So it's both outward facing as well as inward facing and delivering the solutions.
And the capabilities required are more than just what goes on in your ecosystem. So the skills, the increased business acumen is required. Correct. Because as an example, they may want to procure a cloud service in a particular area, HR as an example. And so that process person, account manager, whatever you want to call them, has to have that intelligence, competitive intelligence, to understand what's out there in the market. Should we procure? Should we build? Should we buy? And those types of things, which is kind of increased more as we have more cloud services available.
The other thing I think it's important to your note on the finances of it all is to look at when you go into a service-oriented architecture and you have a service desk and a service catalog, how do you attribute costs from end user all the way through and have that golden thread that goes through and make it completely transparent for those end users? We're not completely there today. I think we do a variety of different models. We do an allocation model, we do COGS model, typical IT stuff. But I think our goal is to get to that point where we can take service lines and attribute the cost all the way through. We want to avoid sort of what I call right pocket, left pocket with the CFO. It's the same company. And so all these difficult chargeback models and accounting that goes back and forth add little value to our competitiveness and our ability to produce great products. So how can we minimize that and create a system that's easy to understand so that we can get the right things funded that actually tie to business value. When they're separate, they're really hard to tie to business value.
Yeah.
So just a quick follow-on. Thank you. Appreciate that. So for each individual, let's say, major undertaking or initiative, do you have to actually develop a business case or a use case for this to move forward? Is it projectized in that type of discipline from a governance standpoint?
Yeah, I think the reason I'm hesitating is I think a couple years ago, each project was very specific, and each project developed a business case and the ROI, and then it moved forward. I think what's really changed is we are more aligned to a strategic vision at a company level, and so the business case isn't as unique, right? It's more a puzzle piece to the broader strategy. So yeah, there's still a business case, but it's more a click down from the company strategy, whereas a couple years ago it was more siloed in business case by business case.
And it's twofold. Again, you know, when you think about what we do as an IT organization, some of the requests are about testing some of the products and the services that the product groups are giving us. So as it relates to a business case, the business case is getting the product out the door for general release. And so that also plays into how we develop our cases.
And it's easy to, at least for infrastructure, to snap a line on what run looks like, which is key. So we can look at what's the prioritization of the projects and the business value tied to it. And I don't like to vote on that. I have an opinion on it, but I like my peers to vote on that so that we exercise a level of confidence in those priorities, and we can execute to them very crisply once we understand what they are and their focus on the business outcomes.
Thank you.
Some other questions? Just raise your hand. We'll send these microphone runners out. We have them scattered throughout the room. Go ahead and raise your hand, and they will come over to you. Keep in mind, this is a great chance. This is a chance to ask questions to the leaders. They deploy the Microsoft solutions first before they were ever sold to customers, so take advantage of this captive audience we have right here. It looks like we do have one. Go ahead.
I have a question for Jackie and for Brad as well. Do you guys have a common roadmap, or does your business roadmap aligns with network and infrastructure? Because we struggle with services team will be ready, but infrastructure is not. And also, do you influence what kind of hardware or what kind of a service or what kind of a control you want around the services? Who makes that decision?
So we do work closely together. As an example, I'm responsible for the Skype for Business in the enterprise, and I have to work really closely on the roadmap as it relates to the wireless infrastructure, all of those things. So in terms of working together, yes. Yeah. In terms of the roadmap, why don't you?
Right. My philosophy, because I want to be a utility, is to look at what I call non-blocking architecture. So if I can dial in and dial down based on business need, whatever that happens to be, the infrastructure, and again, make it transparent, to the extent I can get there, I know it's going to work for whatever they put on top of it. And so that's my underlying goal, but it still requires really sharp interaction between the two of us on specific things, because we do have the run and the invest, and sometimes the product flighting goes so fast and the release is so fast, not even I can keep up with that. And so that's where that prioritization, we have a strategy investment board, I run the infra ops board, so we jointly, all the OpEx and CapEx under the CIO is run out of infra ops, and leaders are sharing their ideas around those priorities, and we're collaborating against a complete list of priorities. That gets sent up to the strategy investment board for decisions on those priorities against those business drivers. And so we're very much aligned that way.
So I know you didn't ask, but I'm going to jump in as the apps guy. One thing I'd want to note that's changed is 3 years ago when I was deploying solutions, you know, somebody like Brad and I would have to coordinate on the server infrastructure. But now as we've moved to Azure, that component's been taken out as an apps delivery. I can, you know, procure my own hardware in Azure and pay for that directly. And so the partnership has changed to be more infrastructure, networking focused, and not so much server focused.
I thought you were going to say, because I'm so good at it.
And because Brad's so great at it.
That was my actually follow-up question, that now we are moving towards cloud. Shouldn't we be doing like our own procurement of the hardware? And do you see infrastructure kind of merging or becoming one team? Because it should be more like in a services team, actually, when they are done, they will kind of design what kind of a services, what kind of hardware they need. They procure that, get it from the Azure dashboard, and then deploy it themselves. You see infrastructure and IT team merging at some point?
I'll say yes, but I think it's a time thing in that while our roles are changing as the cloud becomes more of an enabler to what I call the edge or business groups, I still think there's a training aspect of that so that we curate their experience a bit more because you're basically unleashing a lot of capability, mm-hmm. and there's not necessarily a complete understanding across the organization, depends on how much time they've used to develop on those platforms. And so I think we have a responsibility to help make sure that that transition is done in a very successful way.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Any other questions? Go ahead and raise your hand. Don't be shy. We've got plenty of time. Just raise your hand and we'll send the mic runners out. We've got them on both sides of the room. No doubt your question will be relevant to someone else in the crowd. And while you think on that, go ahead and raise your hand. We can run that microphone out to you. BJ, we've heard from Satya that every company, no matter the industry, is becoming a software company. What have you experienced and seen with the expanding role of IT and blending IT with the business?
Sure, so I'm gonna use Microsoft as an example, but I think this example applies to most industries. I've been in IT for 5 years, and 2 weeks ago I was actually reorged out of IT and I now sit in the product groups. I'm actually in the Windows team. And the reason we've done that is, you know, this divide between the products we ship and the commerce experience that you have or the services that you have that traditionally were IT, they've been blurred. So it doesn't make sense to have two different divisions doing this. And so now I'm in the product teams. When you're interacting with our products like Office and making financial transactions, that should be seamless. And so now I'm actually part of the product stack, you know, end to end versus a back office function that was supporting Microsoft. And I think it's an industry trend thing, right? As we move to Internet of Things, as we move to big data, as companies' service is more, you know, electronic service oriented, I think we're going to see IT teams more aligned with the actual service that companies are delivered. So I think that trend is going to be there.
Great. Don't be bashful. If you've got a question, raise your hand. We'll run a microphone out to you. Now, I know a lot of this is, of course, about what should they do, what advice. What are some of the caution signs? What things to avoid? I mean, certainly you have the opportunity to see some of the pitfalls, again, before it even gets sold to customers. Any warning signs?
I'll throw out a tough lesson we learned.
Yeah.
And when I say it, it's kind of embarrassing. You know, we are all in the cloud. 3 years ago, my team went heavily to the cloud. And as we moved to Azure, we frankly weren't seeing the savings that we expected. And the mistake that we made was we took our on-premise infrastructure practices, where you've got a piece of hardware that just sits there no matter what, and that we hoard that hardware, and we took those same practices to the cloud, and we'd spin up an Azure instance, and it would just sit there in a dev and test environment, just like it used to on-prem. And then we got our bill, and I was like, oh my God, you know, we're spending a lot of money here. And you know, the light bulb clicked, you know, hey, you can't just take your on-premise practices to the cloud. The value of the cloud is you can spin these things up and down near instantly. And so the big realization we've had is when you do a dev environment, you spin it up, you maybe only spin it up for the day, and at night you go ahead and pause it, doesn't run all night, next day you unpause it. And so if you don't change your practices, I don't think you'll get the benefits of the cloud, the agility and the cost savings of the cloud.
That goes to your question around that curation, right? So can we help, in this case, BJ's team, be more successful about how they employ the technology and teach?
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that's really key is, you know, I think we took a more crawl, walk, run. So what are things that are low risk and rather obvious to do? Dev and test, for example.
Absolutely.
And so learn a lot from doing that, mm-hmm. and then build your application plan of record very specifically based on those learnings so that you can your march towards production is yeah. is in step with that plan. So it reduces the level of risk and surprises.
Mm-hmm. And skills and capabilities have changed and morphed as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You think about the stack now, you need to understand how to integrate, how to broker. You need to understand who are the service providers who can provide those services for you. So you have to think a little bit differently. Intelligence, BI, analytics, we focus a lot now on data and governance, so that the ability to do that as well has also been important. And then the architecture, the overarching architectural skill sets have had to evolve.
Well, we're sort of on this precautionary tale theme right now. Of course, a lot of the morning we talked about the security. So maybe you could talk to us all about working with Brett Arsenal's team to evaluate new solutions in the environment. And you know, what's governance like? What should customers be watching out for?
So compliance, governance, risk, security has to be embedded far more than it was before. You know, you go through toll gate processes for applications going out. Security has to be at the forefront. So everywhere where you, when you start, even at the design stage, how do you think about security embedded all the way through the life cycle? When you're thinking about agile and DevOps, to your point, embedding that security mindset as well has had to change. I mean, we work really closely with Brett's team, but in addition to that, our teams have to become knowledgeable in security aspects.
Sure. Yeah, and I would say security and infrastructure, just selfishly. You know, typically they're two separate architectural conversations, apps architecture and infra architecture. It's really important we join those things to have that. A cloud's going to operate differently. For example, the march to the cloud that we've had has made us rethink our edge architecture. More workloads are going directly out to Azure, and so that recreated some capacity problems that I didn't want to see when I talk about non-blocking. So your edge architecture to support that journey for the applications and the security around that become a critical component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd add one other thing, telemetry. As you think about those experiences, the stack, and you know whether you provide the service or someone else does, having that telemetry to anticipate and to have that always on, always available, telemetry has been key. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is something that we've had to build a muscle in.
Great. I think that's all right, we got an audience question. Again, if you would like to join the fun, just raise your hand. We've got several folks with microphones. They'll come run over to you, and you can be in pole position. We got one up front?
Yep. So. I understand this move to the cloud and all the features that you get to put into the cloud that changes dynamically any day you want to do it because you've got a foundation connected. But I really want to get your concepts about the legacy structures that you have on-prem and that where those new components that you're seeing available in Azure and in the cloud don't readily extend back to legacy infrastructure. I mean, in Microsoft, it's a lot easier. You take all the employees and say, this is what you're going to do tomorrow, and they kind of go that way. Yeah. Real world, financially driven organizations that have to comply with all kinds of rules and stuff, we still have to keep, I know you guys have to do it, but I think you're willing to take more risk or at least push that envelope. We have to comply with all these legacy programs that, you know, doesn't allow me to push to the cloud, for instance. So there's a glue that has to be between cloud and legacy infrastructure. And I just got the Delve demonstration. Like, okay, I think that's cool. Can I turn it on inside? No, it's got to work in Azure. Okay. Well, that'll be 10 years before we get to play that game. Sure. Those pieces, what do you do to interface with the product groups to allow them to still consider the back system that may never go to the cloud?
I'll take part of this. So I have an ops team focused in on what I call the journey to the cloud, and they're the guys who own BJ's old environment. So we work very closely with the applications group on what that plan of record looks like. There's this was learned, it just didn't happen because we were all learning about how to do this. There's a prioritization and a business risk conversation that goes, that we started with this easy stuff. I talked about the test and dev environments. But then it was, what are the business applications that we want to try and experiment with first before we get to the huge iron that most companies have a difficult time even thinking about moving. So that prioritization process became really important in how we consider our moves for exactly the same reasons. We may have an absolute to get to the cloud because of who we are, and we're drafting on that, but it doesn't go without the thinking and the smarts that you face every day around, we can't do that one due to SOX or whatever it happens to be yet.
Right.
And my team has a development organization, actually, that helps us with glue bits or code between the early Azure and what ends up happening there. It enables the business groups building applications to adopt quicker. And then what we do is take that code base and go back to Azure and go, this is what a customer zero enterprise would likely want. So think about that in your roadmap as a way to advance capabilities so it makes it easier for folks to use and consume. So that's the role that my team's particularly played in this journey.
Yeah, we probably can take more risks, but we still have SOX to comply with. We still have HIPAA. We still have to protect PII, HPI data. And no matter how aggressive you are moving to the cloud, it's going to be a hybrid environment, right? I can't even think of a single system we've got that's only three or four components that you could ring fence and put in the cloud, right? It's usually 7, 10, 12 components. Maybe five of them move to the cloud, the other seven stay on premise. So that hybrid connection is the reality. And that's going to be the reality even for us for 8 or 10 years. Like it's a long time before you get every single component and app in the cloud. So hybrid is absolutely critical.
Any other questions from the audience? Go ahead and raise your hand. We'll run a microphone over to you. We have several available to you. And in the meantime, I know we're sort of talking about that, but let's talk about cloud migration and what you've learned about migrating apps and systems to Azure, Office 365, and beyond.
Well, I think it all starts with a really conjoined planning process. I mean, my team said, hey, move all your really complex applications, in the next 60 days because it'll be more cost effective, and we're supposed to do that. And that's really easy to say, okay? There's a lot of legacy that you have to think about and how to re-architect into that cloud frame. And so that's where this joint collaboration, get rid of the blockers, at least from a physical aspect, so I can help lead the way so that they don't have any issues with how they get to the cloud or when they get to the cloud, is more of a determination of the business risk and artifacts they have to deal with. But
and we looked at it in different ways. So from an IaaS perspective, all the dev environments, our QA environments, very easy to do. Why don't we do that? And then work our way up from a PaaS and SaaS perspective. I think part of the education required in hindsight, more change management than one would ever imagine that is required to do something like this. And the education around that, I mean, the ability to burst and thinking about that and should I be using it? We've had to do a lot as it relates to educating and bringing people along.
I guess I'm the guy on this stage that's made all the mistakes. Big mistake I made that I would pass along is 3 years ago when I was asked to move aggressively to the cloud. I started with platform as a service. I'm going to take this V1 app. I'm going to go to platform as a service on Azure. That's how I'm going to cut my teeth in the cloud. That project was successful, but it took longer to do that than starting with the crawl, walk, run. And when we shifted our strategy to moving to IaaS first and moving our dev and test environments, we significantly increased our speed in moving to Azure, and we built the smaller muscles first. And now that we've got a big footprint in Azure, with more confidence, I can do the other V1 apps. And so I think it's critical to familiarize yourself with something safe like dev and test, and then that gives you the confidence to put your V1 critical apps on the cloud as well.
Always, I will say this, having the courage to go do what he did early on, the learnings that were recouped by that effort, we wouldn't have seen until we got to that place. And so that joint effort was really helpful in reflecting back on other groups that had that same challenge. So.
Great. Well, and we know you use some non-Microsoft cloud services like DocuSign for e-signature. So how do you manage those relationships and support those solutions? Is there anything to watch out for?
So we have a strong partnership with DocuSign. Yeah. The key for us is getting buy-in at the top in terms of rolling out digital signature across the enterprise. And part of what, partnering with DocuSign is, how do we do that in a way that we bring along, legal being one of the main people that we need to focus on? And then what are those core processes that can help us accelerate to do digital signature in a more accelerated way? And so we've had to think about it, think about the process, identify those things that are readily receptive and ready for digital signature, and then with DocuSign say, here's what we're thinking, here's our roadmap, how can you help us accelerate?
There's another interesting bent. This is a very fascinating subject for me. How do you interoperate against this first and third party world? So I've got, some people use HR in the cloud, some people use Concur for travel, there's first party stuff for us, which is really consumable as a third party for me, which is O365 and Azure. And I think about that productivity I talked about earlier. It's my job to make sure that everything works all the time from an infrastructure perspective, and that I can take the phone call from somebody who isn't productive and resolve it really quickly, whether it's a first party or a third party app. And so I think about modalities of the experience. Maybe they want it on a mobile device, maybe they want it, maybe they want chat, email, maybe they want a live person, they want to escalate to a video session. How do we curate their experience, reduce the time to resolve very quickly, even though we may not own it as a first party capability? And I think that's a really interesting challenge for all of us in the industry right now. We've built a inexperience window, if you will, that's placed as an overlay, whether you're in an HR app or the travel app or the finance app. It unifies, and it's sort of device agnostic in terms of how it interacts with that interface, so that we can be very consistent about where help goes. Because what I'd like to avoid, what I don't think would be productive, is having all our end users call DocuSign themselves. Yeah. That doesn't make sense. Or call O365 themselves. And so as an enterprise sponsor of, you know, trying to curate that experience and get trouble resolution very quickly, I look at the balance of how you use automation and how do you present yourself as a proxy to all those third and first party activities that we do.
And Brad brings up a good point. When you think about the service maturity, the ability to Brad's point, to provide SLAs and OLAs betwixt and between, right?
Yeah.
Across between ourselves and our service providers and our cloud providers, et cetera, that service maturity and building that, we've spent a lot of time on that, even with our service provider who is Microsoft, right?
Yep.
And so we work with the PGs in terms of how do you evaluate the maturity of a service? How do you evaluate the maturity of bringing up that service when something goes wrong? Mm-hmm. And we've spent a lot of time focusing on service maturity.
And the SLA pull through, right? So if you have a cloud service that's, you know, I'm just making numbers up, 99.9, you can't call a 5.9 capability if the underlying components don't support that all the way through.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
you have to think about that as well as you sort of telegraph out the SLAs to your end users and your responsibility around resolution.
And add that telemetry. Mm-hmm. Again, that telemetry, yeah. the ability to have that telemetry all the way through
yeah.
is key.
That's
yeah.
a game changer.
And
sure.
I think real time becomes more and more important as we get into more collaborative technologies. How can I resolve it very quickly? And it doesn't mean you snapshot information on telemetry every 5 or 10 minutes, because if you're collaborating, that's like a very short window to make something better.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the extent we can dial that telemetry information down and put it into the right hands for proactive as opposed to reactive on the experience, you again become that transparent partner more and more and more.
Great. Looks like you provoked a couple of questions here. I think you were first, unless you're bidding on an auction item. Let's go up there to number three.
Now, you touched a little bit on it earlier, but what at least what I'm seeing is as this momentum goes to the cloud, I'm seeing a new kind of class of IT skill set that's having to evolve around contract management, around procurement,
yeah.
around vendor interfaces. Can you talk a little bit about how that may have changed the types of employees you have? Is that a new section in your groups, or how are you developing those skill sets?
So there's two pieces of it. We have a central organization around contracting, suppliers, you know, the negotiation portions of that. What we've built in each one of the service managers, in each one of the services, is the ability, to your point, to understand how you negotiate, what are the terms, how do you set up OLAs and SLAs. And that's a skill that, frankly speaking, I think we're working on it, but it is a skill that we're definitely seeing. I think there's another piece of it as it relates to understanding the types of services that cloud providers can provide. Right, and Brad touched on SuccessFactors as an example. You know, our business came and said, hey, we want to use SuccessFactors. You as the IT person, do you understand what SuccessFactors, who they are, number
yeah.
one? Do you understand what they do, what they can provide? How do you integrate that into the environment? How do you evaluate whether it's best for the environment? A very different approach to developing something yourself.
Yeah, I think when I got here, one of the first hires I made was someone to help with vendor management, because I knew coming in I needed to clean up. I think we went from 13 large vendors down to three now, and we ended up saving about $100 million in run, which is huge. But it just needed to be proved out that this is an actual responsibility that's super important, especially if you're balancing between one first and third party, but also how you resolve issues. If you're using managed service contract labor, you really need to get really tight in your definition of what success looks like and who you're going to use to do that, so you build that background skill set, because they're acting as a proxy, essentially, for me in that journey with our customers, our internal customers.
I would add, you know, I do want to, when I talked about the Power BI and how we scaled, how we've had to scale utilizing our service providers, there is another element that says, do I understand the capabilities of these providers now to be able to help me scale and bring expertise and help me accelerate where I need to? And so you also have to build that muscle as well.
Great. Good question. We got another one in the middle here. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, I found your insights regarding hybrid interesting, and it's really consistent with our approach to it. Yep. But what I see is more and more emphasis from, at least when I speak to Microsoft about Azure, that they actually are in a better position to protect that very most sensitive data than probably I am. I don't have a security staff that is anywhere close to what Microsoft has. Sure. So how do you kind of reconcile that? I mean, is it just because you're Microsoft and you have such deep knowledge and expertise around security that you can mirror that outside of Azure? Or, you know, what's really holding you back from actually moving it there, as at least I feel they're encouraging us to do?
We still have a foot. So Brett's team, who I think was here earlier, he's on the CIO staff. And so he has a team of folks. There are separate security folks in Azure, but they all work together. So there's several security teams in the company. I don't know as if while there's an interdependency to some extent, I don't recognize it as being something that blocks our enablement or our journey to the cloud. We've always had security, and in fact, as I look at what we're all facing here going forward in the next few years, it's going to become even more important to have really robust security capabilities. Even to the extent you out-task it to the cloud and put confidence in it, I think it still requires somebody that's part of your staff to actually tie these pieces together.
Yeah, it's come up a couple times that because we work at Microsoft, we can take greater risk, and you know, we certainly have a little more runway to work with beta software. But I would look at it the inverse way as well. There's a reputational risk, right? If I put all my critical commerce data out on the cloud and then somehow that data is compromised, right, that's going to be amplified even more, you know, because we are Microsoft and because we are using our own cloud services. So we can't take more risk, but there's also a huge reputational risk. So there's a balance there.
Yeah, and we're frankly no different than any other corporation. We have legacy systems that frankly speaking, you know, the long tent in the pole is our ability to quickly understand how we can convert that to be able to go out into the cloud. So I think we suffer from that just as much as anyone else.
Yeah. If not more sometimes.
That's right, sir.
I think we got another question down front here.
This is a question for Jackie, and I'm piggybacking off of the success factors question. You talked about the team aptitude or ability. What about the process associated with that? Do you have instantiated processes to identify a request for cloud applications and how you process that internally?
Yeah, when I talked about the services that we have a front desk approach, which is the request comes in, and we have certain people that help with that aptitude to evaluate. And so the HR folks, the relationship managers, the process managers, those are the folks who have the acumen to do the evaluation. And then it's handed to the service folks, who are the integration folks, to determine, get Brad involved. What do we need to do to integrate? Are the integration services required? And so that's how it works through a process. We do have a process everywhere from the front desk all the way through to the back end in the implementation.
And it's documented and followed regularly.
absolutely. Because again, when you think about the security implications, the risk and compliance, which plays a big role, we have to do the vetting effectively to be able to bring something into the enterprise. And
we talked earlier about the business process manager that we have and the interface with the business. The goal is for that individual to be a trusted advisor, right? So that means they're sitting at the table with those HR leaders, in this example, in their staff. And so I would hope the first listening system would be that strategic dialogue that HR staff is happening, because our business process manager is sitting at the table and can have a constructive dialogue. So I would hope that would be the first filter. But if it isn't caught there, then it's the formal processes that Jackie talked about.
Thank you. Great. We have just a couple moments remaining. I want to give you guys the last chance. Any parting words, anything that I perhaps didn't steer you into that you want these fine folks to know?
Personally, for me, I've been in this industry for a long time. I won't say the number, it'll make me really old. But I've never been more excited about the changes that are going on. I've always been one to not fear that change, and I would encourage everyone not to fear change. Embrace it and figure out how, as a community of IT professionals, we can help change the world in a different way using the latest and greatest technologies.
I'll just close admitting my third mistake. Evidently, I'm the only mistake-ridden person up here. You know, we always talk about the most critical apps, the SOX apps, the HR apps, and moving to the cloud. It feels risky. And it's easy to really focus on those mission-critical apps. But I assume your companies are like ours. We've got 2,500 apps in this company, and probably 2,200 of them aren't that critical. And so we can focus on those and have that be the first wave, and build that muscle, and then tackle the secondary and then primary applications last. I think if you focus too much on the barriers to move your showcase apps there, you're missing an opportunity for the long tail. Frankly, where your most infrastructure and servers are, you can move those things immediately with low risk.
I think the notion that every company is becoming a technology-driven company is true. And the question, or what I would pose, is that as an IT organization, how do you stay relevant? How do you make sure your skills, that your staff, your employees, are relevant in the new world? The ability to understand, gain insight from data analytics requires you to think more broadly from a business perspective than ever before. So I would focus on that capability to stay relevant in the new world.
Great stuff. Well, thank you to our panel, everybody. Brad, BJ, Jackie, thank you. We'll let you off the hook.